races over the summer continue to roll up, including Tarawera and Old Ghost. Need an awesome pack for your next big or small adventure? Look no further than Ultra Spire. Bryce Thatcher has been making the very best in hydration vests for 41 years, and they just keep getting better. Head over to www.ultraspire.nz for more details. While you're surfing the web for great deals, head over to Wild Things, the OG online Aotearoa and beyond trail running community. VIP members get a discount code for 3 months to shop with credit. So DCR 2023 will now give an epic new VIP member $20 credit to drop in the Wild Things shop. And obviously they get the VIP discounts with that too. Head over to wildthings.club to check that out. Now, on this episode of Dirt Church Radio, you catch our talk with Christian Morgan, who holds the southbound supported FKT on the Appalachian Trail. Over the 45 days and change that Christian was out there, he was smashing currans every day as part of his nutrition and recovery. We covered this last week. There were 83.3333 black currants per capsule. Then Christian consumed at least the equivalent of 7,499 black currants on his trips. That's heaps. And no wonder he did well. Head to www.currants.co.nz to read up on the science and get behind these wondrous little purple capsules. And while you're there, you get 20% off with your first order of Currants 30s with the code DIRTCHURCH. Further Faster is the best independently owned outdoor store in the known universe. Whether you're heading out on climbing, paddling, tramping, or running adventures, look no further than Further Faster for all your gear and expertise needs over the summer. If you're lucky enough, head over to 57A Buchan Street, Sydenham, Otutahi, Christchurch, or hit them up on the web at www.furtherfaster.co.nz.
Just like Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio.
Episode 256 of the Dirt Church Radio podcast. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I am Eugene Bing. I'm Tēnā koutou, nō mai, hoki mai. We made it.
We did.
We made it.
We're back in the car.
It's raining again.
We're at Riverhead. We went on a hike, not a walk.
Yes.
A hike.
It was good. We even encountered some bit of technical trail.
Yeah, it was good. No, we went on a walk, didn't we?
Or was it a hike?
Okay, it was a hike. We went on a hike.
I read the program. It said hike. Anyway. Hey, week down from Rage Against Riverhead. How are you feeling?
Yeah, that didn't go as planned.
Well, you went for a run.
I went for a
run. In the forest.
I went for a run in
the
forest.
Sounds like a plan to me.
It was good. So, what a great event. Essentially, Lactic Turkey had an event in the, probably a decade ago, called the Moro Madness, 24 Hours of Moro Madness.
Oh, really?
And for those who aren't from around here, a Moro bar is a type of chocolate confectionery, so Moro sponsored this relay event, and then it got folded into the Riverhead Relapse, so they had the...
I did not know that history.
...backyard and the relay, and then because some people were in a country to the east of us were pacing... Or were found to be pacing their backyard runners.
This I didn't know this scandalous history.
Yes, then wow. Lazarus Lake, king of the backyard, said, no, you can't have relays and backyards at the same time, so it got split off. So this was the first year that they had the relay, so it was an 8, 12, or 24-hour relay in teams or solo. I lined up to do the 24 solo. Made it about 9 hours.
Yep.
And just had enough, basically. Yeah.
Still, you ran for 9 hours in the forest.
It was good times.
Yeah.
Super good course, technical, fun, heaps of people.
Some of the teams events look, I mean, sorry, the team races, the 8, 12 and 24 hour, were there? No, hang
yep,
on, what were
8,
they?
12, 24 hour, yep.
Yeah, teams races look pretty fun.
Yeah.
People getting amongst it and getting into the spirit of it and some costumes.
Yes, absolutely. Some costumes, there was all sorts of different people. We had a group of policemen from Hamilton next to us.
Oh yes,
wandered up that came up state, found their way up State Highway 1 for the event, and they had no idea what it was about.
Yeah.
Or but you know, got amongst it and had fun. And
did they were they tempted to deploy spikes on the trail to inhibit their competition?
There was no competition going on. These dudes were here for a good time.
A good time. Yeah, excellent. So. Oh, good to hear. Good to hear.
But no, it was great. It's a really interesting, for me, reflecting on the fact that, you know,
not doing this for years and then doing two ultra marathons within 8 weeks of each other. Mm. So doing just about 100K at Blue Lake and then a 60K recently. It's been a really interesting process of, you know, was I physically recovered? Yes, I was. Was I mentally recovered? I don't know if I was. You know, the recovery of going through that run. I mean, it's been a week later. I've had a couple of runs. I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
But still quite tired, and just what that looks like. And then that thing of comparing yourself to other people. The thief of joy that is comparison.
Yeah.
And actually giving myself a bit of a break and just going, hey, yeah, you had a good time. So. Yeah. Loved it.
Hey, they look like they had a good time down at Kepler as well, especially Dan Jones with his sixth win on the trot and Katie Morgan as well. That's her second win and third time on the podium, because yeah, I think she did the January 2020 edition, didn't she, where she got third. Ruby Muir, of course, has got six wins as well. And so has Russell Hurring, who won six in a row from 1990 to 95, and Ruby won six times between 2012 and 2019. Yeah, so Dan, he beat Daniel Belchin and David Houndschmidt. It looked like there was going to be a bit of a race for a while by the sounds of it.
Yeah, David was 1 minute back at Rainbow Reach.
Yeah, then he had foot problems, I think.
Have you seen his Instagram stories?
No. Do I want to?
Not really.
Okay,
The dude has a hole in the middle of his,
yeah,
sort of just at the back of his arch. Bottom of his heel.
Ouch.
He's got a hole.
Ish.
And talked about the fact that, you know, he the shoes that he was wearing weren't the ideal one for the long run and destroyed his feet. He said it cost him a lot of time. So had all things been equal, it would have been amazing. And that's the way that it goes sometimes,
it is. That's racing. But yeah. But it'd be good to see a good smackdown, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean,
but then, you know, would Dan have been able to, you know, maybe that would have changed the way that he raced.
Yeah.
If David had got closer. Well, still he was a minute back, wasn't he? But yeah, good racing. And then in the women's two, Nancy Zhang got up to Luxmore first, and then Katie came back and got ahead of her and took the win.
Ding dong. And yeah. I mean, Nancy Zhang 5:47:38. Robin Leash, who I had the pleasure of hanging out with a little bit last week. Her and her husband Teddy were there, just crewing and setting up helping Sean. 5:48:01.
Wow.
So
it's close, isn't it?
What's that? Like 23 seconds.
Yeah, so you're both on the gates, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're running across the gate together.
You're sprinting.
What a thing. And then Jono Jackson and Stephanie Wilson were winners of the grunt.
You had FOMO?
I did. Yeah, we were talking about this when we were out for the walk. Maybe not necessarily for the
hike.
Run. Sorry, hike. But just that vibe of being down at Kepler. It's such a special event.
Yeah.
And the people who organise it, the volunteers, you know, how the whole community gets in behind it. It is a special, special race on the calendar. And so I had FOMO for that stuff.
I had FOMO for that stuff too. You can keep your run. Six in a row, you know. Well, six starts in a row. See how I feel in 12 months. But my God, I did want to go down there. But look, we will be on an airplane when this comes out.
We will. Yeah, heading over to Mount Kosciuszko for the Ultra Trail Kosciuszko. It's going to be fun in the snowy mountains.
Yeah. Well, they may be snowy, or they may not be.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It was snow last year.
It was.
And we're keeping our eye on the weather report, and it just looks kind of warm. So who knows what who knows what will await us, but
who knows, as you know, could be 30 degrees, could be snowing, could be both. And the wild, of course. So that starts the day we're on the plane, the wild starts. So that's going to be, I mean, I'm looking forward to what promises to be a great festival of trail running in Arrowtown. And it's good to see Arrowtown getting a bit of, you know, being the centre of it all, because it's such a great running venue in New Zealand, isn't it? So good luck to everyone getting out in the hills for the wild this week, and we look forward to hearing how that all goes.
We're 24-hour champs.
Yeah. They didn't look too cold, did they?
No.
No snow
Taiwan.
Issues there.
No snow issues there. Humid. Yeah. Lots of Dirt Church Radio alumni there.
Indeed.
So should we list them?
We should.
Let's try.
All right.
Andrew McDowell.
Dawn Tuffery.
Fiona Havice. Jamie Stevenson.
Jamie Stevenson. But yeah, look, congratulations to everyone over there. It looked like super tough conditions with the heat. And I know, for instance, Andrew just came sliding in right at the last second, didn't it? It looked like he was lacing up his shoes on the way from the airport almost, but still managed 202 kilometres. So we will look for, well, no doubt, we'll have to grill him about it at our Christmas special this year.
We'll grill
the
him about
the Dirt Church Christmas special.
Stay tuned for details of that.
It'll, indeed.
We'll be, we're just sort of finalising things.
Maybe this year might be a little bit different. Who knows?
A little bit of a regular.
Hey, look, last episode, we mentioned, or in the greatest run ever from Aaron, he talked about the Hamilton finish.
Yes.
So we heard from Lisa Hamilton after that episode, and she's the daughter of Rob Hamilton, who is the eponymous. Is that the word?
Yep. Yep.
Ancestor of the Hamilton. So Lisa writes, Dad was a massive fan of the trails and loved Tarawera. It was his life. He wasn't fast by any means. Just check out the time above. Oh, she sent a photo for finishing that 102. But that aside, he represented everything that is trail running. He was one of the two who formed 50-50, where they got 50 people to do the 50 at Tarawera Ultra. They succeeded this in 2023. Sadly, Dad didn't get to this as he passed away rather suddenly in August 2021 from sepsis and COVID. He did get to see me do my first ultra, not Tarawera, 2021, where I went out and did it anyway without the aid stations. I'd done too much training. And in his honour, I am now training for the 102 at Tarawera 2024, under the guidance of Kerry and Ellie of Squadrun, two people who he held in very high regard. Other than direct family, they were the only ones who spoke to him before his final moments. Kerry and Ellie even bought out a Squadrun shirt in his memory, which, if you're at any events, you're bound to see. It's a blue and black Squadrun shirt. This was because Dad loved Kerry and Ellie so much, he had the two shirts sewn together so he didn't have to be dedicated to either the blue team or the black team. I now wear his old one to events. Pictured above. I'll put the picture in the show notes. At the Wet Kinloch event, Aaron, my brother from another mother, spoke of. Okay, enough said, but now you know what a Hamilton is after all.
Nice.
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa. What a legend. And thanks for reminding us of Rob. And that's run at Tarawera next year. It's going to be pretty special. See you there.
And that's the thing, isn't it? When you think about the sport, which can be incredibly solitary, it is also one that does tie in family and does rely a lot on family support, and with that there is wonderful moments, there is moments of loss and there's moments of grief. And that ties us into our interview this week with the captain, Christian Morgan, who's a British ultra runner who recently set a new fastest known time supported southbound on the Appalachian Trail, and he completed the 2,189 miles. That's 2,189 miles.
Miles, not kilometres.
In 45 days, 4 hours and 27 minutes. And he's the only person to complete the Appalachian Trail in both north and southbound directions in under 90 days in two consecutive seasons. Wonderful conversation. Very engaging man. Veteran of over 100 ultras. In 2020, he set the speed record for the Southwest Coast Path, Britain's longest national trail, completing 630 miles in 10 days. And yeah, he's fascinating. He's really deep thinking, a very, very, very lovely dude. And you're going to love this chat. But he also asked that we make this interview in honor of his dad, Roger Morgan, who passed away recently. So it's our great honor and privilege to dedicate this show and this interview with Christian to Roger Morgan.
Moi mai rā, te rangatira, moi mai rā.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block, something that sung to you for some reason. Send them in to us, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Caitlin Knox. So what makes a run the greatest one ever? The people, the place, the snacks, the trails? I'm not really sure, but I know that this one was pretty bloody special. I've never felt like I've had the life-changing run that would class as my greatest run ever. I'm pretty young, so I still have hope that I have ages for another few epic runs to happen. Summer of 21-22 was a great one for myself in running as I was training towards my first 100k race. The adventure planning started with my peak long run for Tarawera, coinciding with my family being away in the South Island. She puts here, I'm from Tauranga. So I did a bit of research into possible day-long adventures, and then I realised that the Abel Tasman starts about 15 minutes from where we were staying near Takaka. I was going to try and run the full thing in a day. I wasn't racing it. I was just going to go for a steady solo day out in the trails, time on feet, and at that stage, the furthest distance I'd ever covered. No biggie. So in New Year's of 2021, I set up from Wainui car park just before 10 a.m. with a full pack and a big smile. I waved goodbye to mum and dad and set off for the first 22k before I'd crossed the Awaroa Inlet. And she says here, my first ever water crossing in a run, hopefully at low tide if I got my timings right, to meet my non-run appearance for a supply drop. I took it easy and just enjoyed the beautiful views of Tasman beaches and stunning native bush, peppered with friendly greetings as I passed hikers. I got to the crossing okay and was a bit taken aback by just how much water there was to cross. I took a surprisingly good path across, managing only to get up to my knees wet, which if you've done the Abel Tasman, you'll know is pretty lucky. I got to the other side and I couldn't see mum and dad, so I decided to take a seat at the hut and have lunch. 15 minutes later, I see mum and dad walking towards the hut from the beachside, opposite to the track they were meant to be coming down from the car park. Turns out the road to the car park was an unsealed four-wheel drive track, not quite ideal for our camper van. We all sat down for a bit and I got to hear about camper van drifting adventures, then being unable to get to the crossing markers to get here, having to walk all the length of the inlet before their own water crossing, picking the worst and deepest spot, having to swim across because their feet couldn't touch the sand at the bottom. They were soaked in their normal clothes and jandals, but they were happy to see me and drop off my food top-up. After a slightly soggy sandwich, some hugs and a repack, I was off and back running. It was an absolutely stunning day. The beaches were golden and the water was sparkling. I was truly on a runner's high for the next 30 kilometres. I had a bit of a dip in my mood and the final 10k were definitely a big effort. And then before I knew it, I was dropping down into Maraho to finish. I could see a hiker ahead of me and willed myself to finish strong with a sprint to get in front of him. I'm competitive as get out, and it's something I like to try and do at the end of races too. Mum and Dad were there cheering me on. It was an awesome finish to a truly epic and special day. 60-odd K in about 7.5 hours, no blisters or injuries, and I felt pretty great. Definitely was made even greater by the fact that my parents got to share in the fun by having such a big adventure. Well, they did nearly drown, Caitlin, in the middle, having not prepared to swim. But it makes this run so much more special for me because they put so much effort into helping me finish and surviving drifting in the camper van and near drowning. Well, she did put that, and near drowning. And it's left lasting, hilarious memories that we can all look back on and laugh about. So yes, it was a solo run, and not really because I couldn't have done it without them. I'm so appreciative of that. Tarawera ended up getting cancelled because of our good mate old Rona this year, and then I caught it 2 weeks before I was meant to race, so I'm hoping 2024 can be finally the year I get to do 100k.
Oh, Caitlin, yes, that will be your year, absolutely. Camper van drifting, I reckon that could be a sport. I'd sign up for that.
Terrifying.
On watching that. Caitlin, thank you. And there's a bit of a theme there, isn't there, that running is not just about running, is it? It's those family moments, as you spoke about earlier. Yeah, it's interesting the way that greatest run ever often ties into the theme of the show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, even though we don't read them before we put them up. Yeah, but look, let's get into it. All the way from Spain.
Yeah.
So we're at the end of our days. He was at the start of his. Enjoy this fantastic chat with the legendary Christian Morgan.
Ditchitch Radio.
Christian Morgan, welcome to Dirt Church Radio. How are you doing?
I'm good, Matt. I'm good. It's early, but you know what? It's just nice to be chatting to you guys in New Zealand finally.
And I mean, this is a real international affair. Where are you beaming in from?
Actually, I was in London just about 2 days ago, and now I'm in Spain, on the east coast of Spain. So everyone knows, I guess, you know, Ibiza. You guys heard of Ibiza?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just, if you were to draw a straight line from Ibiza to the mainland, I'm in a place called Denia. There's some nice mountains out the back. Yeah.
Goodness me. And not tempted to pop across to Ibiza?
Oh, yeah, I'll take a trip with my girlfriend one day. I haven't been there yet. I've been there before a couple of times, not for partying, just to take in some nice tapas in the old town, though.
Yeah. You're probably the only British person ever to go, yeah, no, I've been to Ibiza, but not for partying.
Yeah, I hate to break the mold. Actually, I love to break the mold.
Yeah. Look, we're not here to talk about, you know, deep house, although we probably could if you wanted to. But we're here to talk about your Appalachian Trail feat. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's been a while. It seems like it's just my life now, you know. Since 2018, helping set the record. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, have you, having had some time away and have some time to sort of decompress, what's it like undertaking something as vast as, you know, 2,189 miles?
Yeah, I mean, it starts with, so first of all, like, you know, when you enter a race, you pay $150, maybe a bit more, something around that. Then you start training and then you do the race and that's it, you know. But with this, it's like $20,000 to $30,000 US dollars. So the first thing is, right, okay, and then you've got to try and like get the product support. So it all starts with, can I get the product support? Can I raise the cash? And then you also weave in your training and try not to get too stressed out by everyone just saying no, no, no all the time. Because you got to have thick skin and accept a lot of no's with product support requests and financial support requests before you get a yes. And that's normal. Otherwise, it would be too easy. So then you do your training, try not to get too stressed. And then finally, when you get to the start of that 2,198-mile trail, even though that's kind of the tough, you know, that's the tough challenge, it's a bit of a relief, actually, to just think, oh, all I got to do now is run every day, all day, which is just less stressful than the other stuff.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's, you can't even compare it to a race. It's an undertaking. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is like, I don't know. I just, with ultra marathon running, I started in 2009, started marathon running in 2000, did my first ultra in 2009. And I just remember the goal with marathon was to get faster, but the goal with ultra was to get longer, you know? And I guess I've finally got over 2,000 miles. I mean, I started at 50 miles. I skipped the 100K. I don't know. Just went straight to 100 miles. Then I did a 200 miler in Italy, Tour of Giants or Tour de Gion, which was pretty cool. Finished that. And then the next year after that, I helped Carol Sabe on the Appalachian Trail. And then I was like doing 35 miles a day with him for just over 2 weeks. And then I went back the next year and I had my own attempt. So yeah, it's been a journey of distance for sure.
When was the first time you heard about the Appalachian?
Yeah, there's a podcast which was run by an English fellow called Ian Corliss.
Yeah.
Tour Culture. In fact, do you guys know that Ian Sharman also used to started that off with him?
Yeah.
That was really cool. So I listened to that podcast and I think Carl Meltzer, Speed Goat Carl, is a co-host or was when it used to run. And Carl would come on and he would talk about Scott's attempt on the Appalachian Trail in 2015. So that's the kind of first time I heard about the trail about 8 years ago.
And yeah, because he was pacing Scott, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then went and had his own crack. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was pacing it. I mean, Carl Meltzer actually had two tries on the Appalachian Trail before Scott even had his first attempt. So, yeah. So Carl Meltzer's a veteran. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you've now done it four times, haven't you?
Yeah. I've had four attempts. I mean, if you actually count the fact that I started once this year already, and called it quits on day two because the weather was so bad, and then thought, okay, it's all over, and then went back to the trail after we waited for the weather to pass. Mm. I mean, really, but you can call it my fourth attempt, I think. You know.
What you, just before we get into the diving deep on this particular expedition, I'm going to call it. What was it like pacing Corral Sabe? How did that come about? And tell us about running with that legend.
Yeah, desert, Morocco, Sahara Desert, 2016. I'm running Marathon des Sables. Most of the guys who run that are probably kind of corporate finance guys in the city going through a midlife crisis. You know, I'm there because I'm a runner, a passionate runner, you know. And most of my tent mates are just all having something in common that I don't have, which is, I guess, money. You know,
money.
And I'm just in the tent thinking, I don't know. I don't want to talk about spreadsheets. You know, I'm going to take a walk. So I took a walk and ended up in the like a kind of a reception area where you can sit and hang out. There's no one there really. You know, just people passing through. And Carol Sabe sitting there. Yeah, it's nice. It's pretty sweet, really, to think about that. Think back to it. And I was sitting there, and he was sitting there, and we just started chatting, and he. You know, he said he wanted some fresh air from his tent mates, and it was the same with me. And he started talking about the Pacific Crest Trail and how he was going to hike it. Never told me he was going to go for the speed record. And then, yeah, I really just got along well with him. Just a nice, quiet, peaceful individual. And then I saw on Strava that he set the Pacific Crest Trail record on a Strava post. So I said, hey, congrats. And then he invited me to come and pace him on the Appalachian Trail. And that's how I got to know him at Marathon des Sables.
Wow.
Wow. Yep. Thanks, investment bankers, for that, forcing two passionate runners out of their tent into the darkness. One of the things that I'm really... We all have a first introduction to the Appalachian Trail. Mine was, I don't know if you've ever read the Bill Bryson novel, A Walk in the Woods.
Yeah, but hold on, and novel.
Bill Bryson.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And he ends up sort of essentially on a whim walking the Appalachian Trail with his friend. What was it like? I mean, it's not just something for people to set a fastest known time on. There's a real culture around it. There's law and there's a society almost. Built around this trail. What was it like immersing yourself in such a richness?
So let's go back to 21. And his friend's cat, his friend's name is Katz, by the way.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a real character, man, in that book. Anyone who hasn't read it, go and give it a go. I like that. It's full of factual stuff about trees catching diseases and, you know, like, yeah, very cool. So... Yeah, the community, typically, I guess you could call them the thru-hiking community. And a thru-hiker is someone who does the entire 2,000 miles in 1 year, right? So so in 21, I had my second attempt at the Appalachian Trail, and the two first attempts in 19 and 21 finished at Hot Springs. So that's 250 miles or so. So that's just 5 days worth of running 50 miles a day. And I was really disappointed, but we had the hire vehicle. We were over in America and I really wasn't ready to just fly back to the UK. So in fact, I think that year I wanted to be a thru hiker more than a trail runner because I had this big long beard. My hair was down to my shoulders and I was watching Darwin on the Trail YouTube videos about what gear to take on your hike. And I think deep down, I just wanted to hike the trail that year. So anyway, I came off the trail in Hot Springs and I got my mum, who's also my crew gun section, to drive me up to Hanover, which is about 500 miles from the finish, drop me off with, I even had a through hiking backpack with me. So I don't know if that was a coincidence or just subconscious kind of stuff, you know. And I put all my stuff in a backpack, my tent sleeping bag, and I actually joined, and it coincided with the through hike. A lot of the through hikers were in Hanover, and about to finish the trail, the last 500 miles. And I joined the guys. I mean, I started off by myself, hiking alone, and eventually you talk to someone, you set your tent up near some other people, and you end up, I joined a crew called the Dirty Bubble. And like these guys were awesome. And I just hiked with these through hikers who had hiked the previous 1,700 miles, and, you know, and they embraced me, and I became a section hiker. Like, if you don't do the full, you're a sec, but it was a big section. And yeah, I mean, it's a great community, and there's all sorts of interesting words, like trail family becomes tramily. I can't think of any other stuff. It'll come to me, but yeah, it's an amazing community. It's not just about trail running for me.
Yeah. Is there any standoffishness between the through hikers and the trail runners?
Well, yeah, because I guess they're all looking at me in a strange kind of way when I said, oh, I got injured down in Hot Springs and now I'm back on the trail hiking. So there was lots of curiosity questions. A guy called Road Soda. Actually, it's quite interesting because a lot of these through hikers by now are really in great shape. They're super lightweight with their packs. And actually, the through hikers are jogging the flat sections, jogging the downhills, you know, with their packs because they're pretty light. And, you know, I just said to the guys, it's not much different from what you guys are doing. Obviously, we're hiking the really steep parts, we're climbing the rocks, and then we're jogging everything else. So, but we do it obviously for 50 miles a day. So I tried to build this bridge between what a FKT setter and a through hiker is. And I think the fact that I was camping with these guys every night with like tons of scraggly long hair and a big scraggly beard, I think these guys like just took me in and was like, oh, this guy's actually just one of us.
Yeah. What about the community beyond those who are actually walking or hiking or running? You know, do you encounter others, you know, the people who live in that area? I know it's a remote part of the world, but, you know, are there encounters with those who live there?
Yeah, so I guess the trail, it used to have immigrants living, like those mountains, the Appalachian Mountains used to have people living all along where the trail is. In fact, you run past old buildings, really old style, you know, stone buildings and stuff and stone walls. And I think what happened with when the Appalachian Trail was built, a lot of these people, the land was bought around the Appalachian Trail to protect it. And these people had to move out. So actually no one really lives on the Appalachian Trail. You do run across some farmland, I guess, and then you run through some towns. But as for the trail itself, it's protected by the ATC, Appalachian Trail Conservancy.
Right.
There are hostel owners as well. But yeah, as for like people living on the trail, it's kind of, maybe they used to, you know.
Yeah, I sort of had this romantic image of the, well, I don't know, romantic's the right word, but the people of the Appalachian Mountains and that sort of storied history of their own. Being somehow connected to it.
I think they're doing, there's a whole load of Appalachian music around it, folk music. So I actually delved into this and I started, because I wanted to really study the Appalachian Trail before I get there. So I listened to the music and, you know, there's these Irish immigrants who are coming over, living in the Appalachian Mountains, and singing and dancing and writing poetry. So there's, it is so that was once, but unfortunately no longer, which is quite sad really.
So this year and what turned out to be the successful crack at it, but, you know, as you've mentioned, the weather was not playing ball to start with.
Yeah.
It sounded atrocious.
Yeah. I mean, I think when Scott Jurek did it, there was the most rainfall ever that year. And I think that's been surpassed. All records have been broken from this year now. And it was, I mean, it was devastating. You know, I was, so, you know, you guys are ultra runners, I guess. Do you run ultras? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't do my research.
we're very average.
Oh, man. Anyone who finishes a marathon and beyond is not average. Superhuman. So, like this year, the weather was enough to take hikers. Like, hikers were getting off trail. A lot of hikers didn't finish their hike this year. I mean, the trail actually was, there was diversions in place. So what I was going to say in asking if you guys were ultra runners is, so when you're training for an ultra, most people have a training plan and they have, you know, a base building phase. They have like a peaking phase and then a taper phase. So I got to the end of my taper phase and then I had another 6 weeks of waiting to start. Mm-hmm. So my fitness was, yeah, by the time I got to Katahdin, actually, because I'd already run, I started in the north and came down south. By the time I started, I'd already run from the top of Katahdin down to Abel Bridge about three other times, you know, in training, and one of them on that full start day. And when I started on the actual attempt, I felt the worst ever. I felt so bad. My hips were tight. I just felt terrible. You know, my left adductor muscle wasn't feeling good. It was dark that morning as well, whereas the other mornings it was light. So, yeah, it was, I mean, okay, these are really annoying things, but I mean, a hiker died on trail, you know. So, I mean, whatever annoying things happen to me, you know, that's just part of attempting a through hike. I mean, their fastest known time attempt. But yeah, a lot of condolences go out to the hiker who lost his life. And that, you know, obviously his family, that's a lot worse than what I had to go through.
And that's the thing with such an endeavor or expedition like the Appalachian Trail, there is the potential for danger is there. It's an inhospitable environment in many parts. You know, you think about it, people always show the photos of the rocks that you're clambering over and anything like that. Was there any moments for you during that time that you had any sort of close calls or
two times in particular. A guy called Matt Hart, who is a writer, was with me, along with actually some other runners in the White Mountains. And we were going up, we were all under tree line and the weather wasn't great. None of us had our rain jackets on or windproofs or anything. And as soon as we got above tree line, as soon as we approached above tree line, I actually was first in the little crew of people. And I stopped to put my jacket on because I could see it was whipping, you know, of wind. And we all stopped, put our jackets on, and then carried on over these wet, slick kind of rocks. And I saw a flash of lightning and I counted to 9 seconds. And, you know, then we heard the thunder. And then I think the next one was a little bit closer. And then then there was this kind of weird kind of like it was static, like a vibrating sound, like a buzzing sound. And I just turned around to Matt with like wide eyes and I said, "What is that?" And he just said, "Static," because he's from Colorado, I think. So I turned around and I end up running a 5K PB over these wet rocks, you know, to get to, I think it was Madison Hut. And Matt just said he tried to follow me and end up slipping and falling a bit. And I was gone, you know. And so that was one occasion. I didn't want to get struck by lightning. The other occasion was actually the next day. It was part of the same storm. I stopped at Madison Hut and I had to get up and over Washington, which is a notoriously dangerous place for through hikers, whatever you are, day hikers, people. And the wind on, they have a wind forecast on the board, and it said 96 miles an hour winds. And I really just wasn't sure whether it was a good idea to get outside. So I did. I dressed up in all my clothes and I ran, hiked mostly up over Washington. And when I got to Washington, there's a weather station there. and it was like 96 mile an hour winds. So I just questioned whether to go on. I waited there about 2 hours and I thought, I'm not sure if this is going to be safe. So yeah, you're right. There were two particular occasions where I genuinely questioned whether, I was in a dangerous situation.
It's funny with wind, isn't it? Eugene and I, a couple of years ago, were in a race in Wellington. It's called the Wellington Urban Ultra. It's not too much urban about it, but the wind, I mean, that would have been well up over 100 kilometres. I'm not sure if it got up to 100 miles, but that was, I remember thinking, oh dear, you know.
Running downhill, being pushed back up.
Yeah.
It was...
The hood of the jacket does nothing, you know, whipping like a sail. It's so interesting, isn't it? People talk about lightning, water, but it's wind that can be just so very, very concerning.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was actually, obviously, when you're in the mountains, you've got to climb down boulders and stuff and step down 4-foot sections from one rock to the floor. I was able to lean forward into the wind and the wind would hold me down. Like support me as I was coming down, you know. I mean, it was that crazy. And then at one point when I was going up, because I changed the trail, continuously changes directions. One time you're heading southwest, another time you're heading southeast. And when I was going up to Washington, the wind was behind me, and I could almost lean back and just walk up over these rocks. So yeah, wind's pretty. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit scary, you know.
In terms of, I mean, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Sorry, to keep drawing these, an ultra marathon, even something like Tour de Jean, you know, you've got life bases, you've got crew, you've got stuff like that, and it's 200 miles and that's a long way and it's very difficult terrain. But 10 times that, what were your considerations regarding like gear and nutrition and stuff like that? How did you prepare your physical, I guess, your body and what you had on for such a task?
Yeah, I guess I start obviously in the planning, you know, when you're chasing after the product support and the funding, you know, first of all, you got to make sure that you're wearing the right equipment. So can I shout out a couple of people?
Of course.
Cool. Yeah, shout out to Hoka for the past like 3 years for supporting me, you know, with my shoes. And they were my main kind of t-shirt, shoes and all that kind of stuff. So I had to get familiar with all my gear. You know, I didn't want anything chafing. I ripped the insides of the shorts out. Well, I didn't rip them out. I cut them out. And I wore like runderwear because they work really well. And I never chafed, never had any chafing. And then when it was raining, I wore exoskin, which are like a bicycle short. And then that stops any wet material. So again, I didn't chafe. So I had everything down, you know, no chafing, comfortable with my kit. And then there's nutrition. So I started in the months fortifying myself months before with my favorite supplements. Got to shout out Currents as well. Actually, Currents are from New Zealand. So
yeah.
Cool thing about these guys is actually it's not really it's just dried currents, you know. So I was already a fan of every morning I have my smoothie, and it's not just got currants, it's got currants and berries and stuff like that. And these guys have formulated this kind of pill where a handful of currants is in one of these pills. So it just makes it a lot easier. And I actually not only did that like in the months leading up, but all the way during the attempt, I had 2 in the morning, afternoon, and 2 in the evening. So there's fortifying yourself, you know, with the nutrition and the supplements and stuff. And then I guess there's getting out there, you know. So you what the calories every day, what is that, like 6,000 minimum calories a day, you know? So you've got to have food, because if you don't have food, you can't move forwards. Like you got to have the energy, and you got to be able to digest that. So my watch bleeped every 30 minutes and I ate 150 calories every 30 minutes, which I think was impressive, you know, to do that for 45 days. You know, I thought when I came off trail, I would be, you know, like needing to eat every 30 minutes, but it wasn't the case. I was kind of sick of eating by that point. So yeah, there's a lot.
What would you take on board?
So everything, you know, in the morning, I would have a smoothie. I still stuck with my, as well as the current supplements, I still had my berry smoothie. In fact, I had, it was wild blueberries from Maine. So I was having about a pound a day of these things.
So you're like, you were like 90% berry by the end of the trail.
Veruca Salt over here.
You know, one of those things, they like, used to have the gummy berry juice, right? And then they bounce.
Yeah, gummy bears. Yeah.
I used to watch that when I was a kid. So maybe subconsciously, like, you know, I'm a gummy bear, you know. I just bounce down the trail. No, but I really believe that the more of this stuff you put inside, you know, the better you're going to feel. And yeah, I mean, it got me the Southbound record. So I ate Absolutely. McDonald's, I ate ice cream, I ate bacon and egg sandwiches. I ate berry smoothies. You know, I ate trail mix. I mean, kind of everything you can imagine that you can carry as well.
Yeah. And did you, with that everything, I mean, and I guess that's the thing at this point, your body's a furnace, right? You're probably not keeping up with your as hard as you try, you're going to burn, there's always more calories to burn. With that variety, was there a routine, or is just you sort of kept it really easy and whatever you felt like?
No, I started off as a routine. So I was waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning, and I was usually on the trail by 4:20. And within that time, I'd had a black coffee and one of these berry smoothies and all my supplements again. And then I would eat a few snacks, like every 30 minutes, you know, just trail snacks. And then when I saw the crew for the first time that day, it was typically after 3 or 4 hours, sometimes 5 hours, 6 hours, depending on the next road crossing. And then I would have my first kind of hot food, which would be a bacon and egg sandwich, which was good. And I'd have a monster drink as well. I got into those monster drinks. they give you a boost. And then I went back to the every 30 minute snacks again and just ate a 30 minute snack all day until the nighttime. And I had a camping meal and then some ice cream and went to bed. That was it. Yeah.
Eat, sleep, run. You can't do this alone. And you mentioned your mum, but, you know, tell us about that whole crew logistics and how all that worked for you. It's a mission in and of itself.
Yeah, it was a two-person team. There was a three-person team, including me. You know, I'm the runner. Then there was two crew. One, my mum, who, like I said, she's her trail name is Gun Section. And there's a funny story how she got that. We were in Walmart back in 2019. And every time I phoned her up, you know, I'd ask her, because they're big stores. Have you been over in one of those Walmarts?
Yeah. Massive.
Okay, they're huge. Like, you can't, you know. So I'd phone her up and I'd say, hey, mom, like, I can't see you. I mean, where are you? And she, I'm in the gun section. You know. So I think after three times she said that, I was like, okay, let's just say that your trail name's Gun Section. It might stick, it might not, and it did. And then the next crew member is a 73-year-old man called Iceman, David Martin, Iceman. And he got his trail name from giving ice to a young 7-year-old, I think she sprained her ankle or something like that. And he's a trail angel and someone who goes out to the trail every year. He section hikes the entire Appalachian Trail. So I had like two amazing people with me to help me, you know, achieve my goal. And it's not easy. I mean, these guys have to be up in the morning the same time as me and go to bed after I go to bed on the nighttime. So if I'm only getting 5 hours sleep, those guys are getting less. You know. Then they have to navigate Forest Service roads. You know, they may get to a road and a tree's fallen across the road. What do they do? I mean, you know, there's all these scenarios that happen behind what I'm doing, you know, running and stuff. Mm. And then there's, I guess, support. You know, they can't be negative and they can't be, you know, fed up and just like come in and I don't know. Imagine staring at their phones like, hey, guys, you know, give me some attention here. So, yeah, they've got to be strong, mentally strong and emotionally strong to help one of these things take place. So I reckon, you know, to run a world record attempt on the AT, you've got to be a world-class runner, but you've got to have a world-class crew as well.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And you went for experience over youth. I love it.
I mean, I'll be honest, man. I went with what I had. You know, like if you look at most people, Scott Jurek had his wife, Carmel's his dad, and Bell, his friend Bells went along. You know, Jen Farr Davis had her husband. I mean, for someone to dedicate this amount of time for each day for these amount of weeks and months, I mean, my mom was like, yeah, Christian, I'm in, I'll do it. And then Iceman contacted me, so I was lucky with that. So yeah, it's just fortunate that someone wanted to be part of it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And your mum was doing your socials as well, is that right?
Yeah, she was doing the social media. So she was like taking, and she enjoys that as well. She was writing a bit, interacting with people via the comments and meeting some of the people coming out to on the trail and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What, you've got a strange role, haven't you, in that dynamic, in that you probably can't afford to worry about what they're doing or be concerned about what they're up to. You've got a job to do, so that must make a strange, you know, it's an odd relationship, isn't it? I mean as a human being, obviously you're worried about them, you know, when you do hear that things are happening, but you've just got to get on with it.
Yeah, so I mean I evolved over the years. 2019, in fact, my mom has crewed me from 19 20 21, 22 and 23, so 5 years of crewing. And in 20, I couldn't get over to America, and we set the record on Britain's longest national trail. So I have experience with her. But back to 2019, like we were doing a lot of arguing with each other. You know, I was getting triggered by her. I guess she was getting triggered by me. And she's the name Gun Section suits her pretty well. You know, she's very... I mean, fiery. She's fiery, you know. She's and so that's why her and Iceman worked really well, because he's a very laid back, peaceful person. So the fire of, you know, my mom, and then the relaxed approach of Iceman really worked. But yeah, I guess the main worry is, are they going to be able to get to the next road crossing to meet me? And as the years went by, they just proved that they could. So I tried not to worry about these guys. And in fact, I think as time went by, I learned not to worry about these guys. That's it. Oh, you guys are getting dark over there. I was waiting for a sunrise, Matt, but actually it's sunset for you.
Yeah, yes. It's dark outside, and it's what a beautiful day it's been. But did speaking of weather, I mean, it started terribly. You said, you know, you're there, it's dark, the weather's so bad that someone unfortunately lost their life on the trail. Did it get better throughout?
Yeah, the rain stopped. So we left Vermont, and in fact, it affected all the way down to Massachusetts. But I remember once we got into like Virginia, there was actually a bit of a drought. All the river crossings where I could collect water, all the water sources were dried out. So it was kind of the opposite. So I went from running through mud for like, you know, 16 hours a day, days upon end, and water, and crossing rivers that should have been ankle deep, which were now chest deep in places, to not being able to get any water on the trail. So it went the opposite. But I mean, I enjoyed the sun, you know, and if you had to choose between a dry water crossing or like just running through mud all day, I'll just carry a bit of extra water. Give me that any day of the week. Yeah.
There's something. So, I mean, being hot or being, you know, in the sun is one thing, but there's something so encroaching about spending, I mean, I can't imagine spending multiple long days in mud, but even spending a long day running in mud is just so, it can become so problematic in terms of, you know, even the friction on the soles of your feet or all that sort of stuff. Did you have any problems related to that?
Yeah, I did. So that's why I got off trail on, I forget what day it was now, I think it was day 7, with an overuse injury just above my right ankle. So I don't know if you guys or anyone out there has ever run on sand or on the beach. you'll find that your the muscles around your lower legs actually ache because you haven't used them before. So when you're running through mud, it's the same thing. The ground doesn't stop when your foot hits it. It actually goes down a few more inches. So then your muscles are acting as stabilizers that they wouldn't normally need to do on firm ground. So what happened was, after about 3 days, by the time I got into Vermont, I just had a pain which got so bad. I was on my hands and knees and I was crawling and I was crying. And I just got to the point where I made a decision to separate my mind and my body. And I just said to my body, listen, I'm sorry. I really apologize for trying to just push you through this. I'm going to give you a day in a motel and see what we've got tomorrow. And I'm excited and I have faith in you, you know? So 16 miles in that day, I got off trail. I walked in to see the crew barely, you know, I could barely even walk. And I just told them what had happened. And we got off trail, went to a motel, stayed there. Next day, got back on trail. And my pain in my calf, like above my ankle, went from like 10 out of 10 to 4 out of 10. And then eventually went down to 3 and then disappeared. So that worked.
So you made a deal with yourself. Wow.
Yeah, I did. I just, like I say, it's weird. Most people are like, okay, I am me, you know, this is one thing, you know, but what I did was I realized my mind was pushing my body and these are two separate things. So I just had to separate. Okay, Christian, your mind wants this and your body wants this. So you need to listen to your body because your mind is driving you to the point where you're on your hands and knees now.
Wow.
So it was these kind of things happen on trail.
Yeah. But at that point, you're almost like a negotiator between your body and your mind.
Yeah.
It's like there's three different entities. Yeah. It's amazing.
It was cool. I mean, like then I remember this hiker came because I was going against all the northbounders. I was going south, wasn't it? Yeah. All the northbounders were coming up, finishing their hikes. And this one guy came around the corner, he just looked at me and my eyes must have been bloodshot red, my cheeks full of tears. And he just said, dude, are you okay? And I just said, I'm good, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I carried on. And by that point, I'd negotiated. I knew what I had to do. So I was good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an extreme version, but you must have to employ a ton of mental strategies and tools to be able to undertake something like this, especially 4 times, you know, like you got to get out there and do it again. It's quite the mental gymnastic routine you must have to go through.
Yeah. Shout out to Scott and Don at Trail Running Nation. I heard them use that phrase, mental gymnastics. Actually, I was there.
Oh, really? Okay.
The podcast. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard that from those guys, but yeah, it's cool. Mental gymnastics burns energy as well.
Yeah.
So we had this whole conversation about the more mental gymnastics you're doing, the more tired you're going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as like the alarm went off at 4 a.m. in the morning, the mental game started. So I didn't allow myself a millisecond to contemplate what I had to do, because if I would have lay there and listened to my alarm for 60 seconds or just turned it off or just lay there, like the way you feel when you wake up, you're groggy, you know, and actually an hour later or 20 minutes later, that grogginess has disappeared. So you can't lie there because the way you feel at that very moment is temporary. So the first thing I did every single morning, my alarm would go off and I would sit up. My clothes would be in the roof tent. I was on a roof tent on the Toyota Tacoma. And I would just start getting dressed and I would sometimes have to say out loud, the way I feel now is not the way I will feel in 1 hour. And I would just get dressed, you know. So that, yeah, as soon as your day starts, as soon as you wake up, you start with a mental process of how do I make this work? How can I get through this?
Amazing. Amazing. You also had some incredible animal encounters, I understand.
Yeah.
We love a good animal encounter story.
So yeah, one of my favorites, I'll tell you, like there was this, like I said, a lot of hikers are coming north and often they've got dogs and stuff, you know, a lot of hikers, not a lot, but some hikers take their dogs. And yeah, this dog is coming down the trail, a big open slab area in Maine. So I'm a couple of days in, and I'm a bit curious as to why the dog doesn't have an owner, you know, a hiker, sorry. I was listening to, I forget which podcast or something. Was it a podcast? I forget. I was listening to something. I think I was listening to Dirt Church Radio. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, there you go.
Of course. And Matt was telling this cool story. Yeah, just kidding. And then the dog kind of turned around and went 180 back. And I thought, that's a really nervous dog, because my peripheral vision is getting this. You know, I'm not really staring at the dog. I'm just taking it in half-heartedly. Mm. And then I look at the back of its neck and its ears and its tail, and I'm like, holy crap, that's a bobcat, man. That's a bobcat. And it growled at me, and then it went into the bushes. And I was stoked, because you don't see bobcats. You just don't see them. They're like mythical, quiet, private animals who just don't come out. I think they're even nocturnal. And you ask 2,500 hikers, and maybe I think you'll get like one or two who saw bobcats. So I was one of those guys. I was really lucky. Tons of bears, one bobcat.
It's just one bobcat. I guess it's a thing, isn't it? Like, you don't see them, they see you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was aware when I was going through the trail that I was probably being watched, you know, by stuff I couldn't see.
You'd be glad of that. It's something that we ask a lot, especially people who have had, you know, a lot of running experience in the northern hemisphere, because down here, I mean, we've got birds and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, our native species, we've got pigs and goats and stuff, but nothing large and carnivorous in the woods, which is pretty cool, actually. It does make for going overseas. It ramps up the threat level if you're going overseas. But
well, yeah, I mean, I can empathize with you there, Matt, because like back in England,
yeah,
you know,
true,
we got birds and squirrels, you know, and squirrels are just not really super impressive either, you know. But the first time I was on the trail with Carol Sabe, my first bear encounter, we were running. And you don't like necessarily see them as much as you hear them, because when they stand on branches, the branches break. So we both heard some branches break to our right, and we look over, and there's a bear. And it hadn't seen us at that point because it was still walking. And just to see something two times the weight and size of myself is like exciting and scary at the same time, you know. And then after it's gone, you kind of want to see another one, you know. You're like, wow, that was just, it kind of makes it, it sends feelings, it releases feelings inside of you that are real human feelings, fear, excitement, or and you don't necessarily feel these things when you're walking down the street. So to have these amazing human emotions come out, like these ancient human emotions or prehistoric or like Neanderthal or whatever, like these amazing human feelings, yeah, it's part of being out in nature. I guess that's why some people love being out there. It's why I love being out there as well.
And how do you deal with an errant bear?
Errant? What's errant?
Well, you know, it's there. It's wandering around. You're wandering around. It's a chance encounter. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think, yeah, I got to tell a story. It's a true story as well, man. Like, yeah, if Carol listens to this, I hope his memory is as good as mine. But like, I think the second or third bear we saw, it was to our left this time. And I just remember, because I was running behind Carol and the bear was slightly to our left, it meant that I was in between the bear and Carol. And Carol accentuated that by taking a sidestep to get further behind me. So I thought to myself, dude, you're hiding behind me. There's this bear in front of me. I didn't say it out loud, but yeah, I guess. And then it just left us, you know, left us alone. It wasn't really close either. But yeah, Carol actually stood behind me. So that's how he reacted.
Did you check the terms and conditions of your pacer
agreement?
Role?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't not remember that and think I'm just being an ass, but that's what happened.
And I guess it's that thing. Then that comes down to the very human, you know, the human conundrum that has probably lasted millennia is you don't have to be faster than the bear. You just have to be faster than Carell, you know, like.
You got to be faster than the slowest person in the group or something.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. The wildlife out there is amazing. And the snakes, I saw tons of snakes, rattlesnakes, sorry. Copperhead snake. I was filming it. I was like getting right up there. And then I show someone, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, you're just filming like one of the most dangerous snakes on the trail that can kill you. It's a copperhead, dude. So... But I did have my phone on Zoom. I wasn't that close.
0.5. How do you make sense, and I guess are you still, how do you make sense of such an achievement? What's been the processing afterwards like?
You know, like I had Eliud Kipchoge, you know, when everyone I think had to give a talk in the this documentary I was watching, The Runners, or have to give some advice that day. I think Eliud Kipchoge's was, you know, let's not turn around and look back over our shoulders and stagnate in our success. I don't think he used those words, but in his English, you know, let's not just like marinate in our success. Let's always look forwards. So to be honest, actually, most of my time I'm always looking forwards because I'm always... Yeah, okay, I've got the southbound record, but I went out there to get the overall or the Appalachian Trail record, the fastest time, and I didn't get it. So already I'm still looking forwards, you know. So I don't think I've got to the stage in my life yet where I can fully absorb what I've done. But to me, I'm normalizing it. It's part of the mental strategy that in order to be able to do this, it has to be normal to me. Challenging, yes. It has to be normal. So I don't view it the same way as everyone else would view it because I wouldn't be able to do it. So I've kind of just come to terms with, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And I keep my head looking forwards. And the only time I look back is to see what mistakes I made and how, and I can change that for next time.
What is, that's the dreaded question, isn't it? With any runner, you know, with any kind of runner, especially someone who's done something which is of significance. Not that any runner, you know, like you said, anyone lacing up their shoes is doing something of significance. What is the next thing that you have on the cards?
So the Appalachian Trail. I mean, like I'm 46 years old. I'm the second fastest in the world last year, you know, overall. This year I come back, I set the southbound record. You know, I'm in my prime. Next year I go back, I go for the record. But what I do is I go northbound next year and I'll be the first person. There's only two people in the world right now who could possibly attempt what I'm going to attempt. I'm one of them and the other one is Carol Sabate. So I'm going to attempt to hold the record in both directions on the Appalachian Trail. Carol has the northbound. So if he went south next year, he could attempt what I'm going to call the double AT record. So I'm going to go, I went southbound this year, I've got the record. So I'm going to go north and attempt to hold the northbound, which is the overall record. And then I also have the southbound. And I'll be the only person to attempt that in history. And if I pull it off, I'll be the only person to ever have done that. So I'm going back to the AT. That's what I'm doing. Yep. So right now I'm doing the normal thing I do, which is, you know, chase after funding, see if my product support is still there. And yeah.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? For potential sponsors or people who producted, you know, I'm sure that companies like Hoka get inundated with, you know, hey, you should give me money and shoes and what have you. But you've really now, you know, you're reaching for that brass ring and it's a legitimate and very real possibility, bearing, you know, nothing untoward happening.
What gives me the right to think that I can go and set the record on the Appalachian Trail? well, I'm the second fastest in the world, you know, and I have the southbound record as well. So, you know, I mean, I'm pretty legit 2 years in a row. And I've failed a bunch. I didn't just get it lucky first shot. You know, I came back year after year after year. And yeah, so I'm legitimate, guys. You know, a lot of people say stuff. They say they're going to do it. I'm one of these people who does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got that impression early into our conversation. Is old gun section coming with you?
Gun section is coming with me. You know, she is like, she's in it for the long haul. Unfortunately, Iceman said he won't be able to commit to next year. So, yeah, we're exploring some avenues because there's no way I could expect her to be out there by herself. You know, you actually need a crew to do these things. It's a supported record attempt. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. So, yeah, at the moment, looking at some other potential people who might be able to fit that role. Actually, no one's ever going to fit the role of Iceman, but someone else who can, you know, bring themselves and their personality and their strength to the expedition.
And their trail name.
Yeah. And a trail name. Yeah, of course.
On that, now this is the thing that, you know, and people might not know this with the Appalachian Trail, you know, you spoke about Road Soda. There's the best name ever, Gun Section, and, you know, Iceman and, there's String Bean, Anish, all these famous names. Would you mind sharing, do you have a trail name?
So like when I was with the Thru Hikers in 21, those guys called me Down Over. That's because I lived in England, but I used to live in Australia. So instead of Down Under, it's Down Over. So everyone who hiked the trail in 21 calls me Down Over, and they still do. Hey, what's up, Down Over? When I hear that Down Over, it's just, I feel like I'm back on the trail. But actually a guy called Scott Grierson, who raced David Horton in 1991, and became the fastest hiker ever. Scott Grierson came up with a trail name Captain. He made a post on the Facebook, 2022, through hiking page, about there's this guy, and he put a photo up of me. His name's Captain Morgan, and he's going to go for the record attempt. So then everything Thru Hiker I ran past last year was, hey, it came out in three versions. Hey, Captain Morgan, or hey, Captain, or Captain, oh, my Captain, I think, which was from Dead Poets Society. So there was a few variations, but I guess just Captain, you know, was the thing there.
It's pretty cool getting someone else. Cool. If you gave yourself the name Captain, it'd be like, that would be uncool, but someone legit gave you that name, and that's pretty excellent. When does the, when's the next window and sort of you'll be trained and like, what does the build up look like?
Yeah, so like it should have been this year, June 1st, but yeah, finance and then the weather delayed us. So June 1st will give me the 41 days with the most amount of daylight hours. So the earliest sunrises, the latest sunsets. So based off summer solstice, which would be around the 20th of June, that's the perfect window for me. And then preparation will be to still recover. I'm still recovering. I got off the trail 8 weeks and 2 days ago or something like that. So I'm still recovering right now. So I'm doing lots of swimming in the ocean. I'm doing lots of cycling on the bike. In fact, I did park run the other day. So I was running some 6 minute miles, which my body was not ready for that. Yeah. It's kind of aching a bit after. So, yeah, just a lot of preparation and recovery, sorry. And then I'm going to go to Thailand. I'll arrive on my birthday, the 3rd of January, and just go back to my old training ground in the north, the mountains of North Thailand. There's a trail there called the Caffeine Trail because it goes up to a coffee plantation. And I just go up, I run up the trail or hike up the trail, get to the top, drink a coffee, go to the big mountain, run down, just do this, repeat, and then spend a month in America. Got a friend called Veronica Leeds who lives in New Hampshire. And shout out to her and her family. and probably spend some time on the trail, you know, and get acclimatized, and then start June 1st.
That sounds amazing. Look, Christian, it's been such a joy to, you know, we brought this together quickly. You know, you're on the other side of the world, that like you're starting your day. I'd like to thank you for how generous you've been and just insightful. On Dirt Church Radio, we ask every single person who comes on the same question to wrap things up. And that's, Christian Morgan, what's been your greatest run ever?
Yeah. Wow. Give us a minute to think. My greatest run. You know, obviously you can run a long way and that's your longest run. You can run fast marathon, that's your fastest run. Or you can be somewhere in your mind and your heart as you're running, and that may be what you could call your greatest run. And I've happened to be in a really nice place many times in life, in my mind and my heart, and those have been my greatest runs. One in particular one, I guess, which was more focused in my mind, I guess I could speak to. I was doing parkrun. Do you guys know what parkrun is?
We know what parkrun is.
Yep. Eugene, big fan of parkrun.
Okay. Parkrun.
It's great. Yeah. It gets people out there. Yeah. It's a community. Absolutely. And I think
love the whole idea of it. Yeah.
And I was doing a parkrun. I wanted 3-4 weeks prior, I do it every Saturday when I'm in the UK. Like, I wanted to get a personal best. And that for me is like, I wanted to go under 17 minutes, you know. And so the weeks leading up to it, I'd set a pace and I knew what split I had to run the first mile in and the second mile. And it just, and I was going 100% of my effort. And it was always a struggle. And then I got to the start line and I made a decision. I actually decided I would run 90% of my max rather than 100. Forget about my watch. Didn't look at the time. And just run with my mind at 90%. And I did the 5K, and I was really, it was the fastest I'd run in the past 4 weeks. I didn't get the PB, but it was the fastest I'd run. And I didn't have that really terrible engulfing sensation of, I can't handle this, because I still had 10% left. Yeah, I use this with my coaching clients, you know, don't give it 100%. And I still had 10% left, and I got to the finish line and I looked at my splits, and I think they were exactly the same or within 1 second of each other, you know, for the laps.
Wow.
And I felt it easier than I'd run last week, even though I'd run slower last week. So yeah, anyway, the greatest runs for me, that was an example, are ones where I'm at peace in my mind and my heart, and that's my greatest runs.
Beautiful. Yeah, just being in that zone, right?
Yeah.
You know, people talk about it, and as runners, we often overshoot it, don't we? And overthink it and, you know, stress out when it's just, like you say, just back off, let it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, congratulations. Yeah. And thank you so, so much for making the time for us. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you have a crack at that overall record next year.
Yeah, please do follow along. If anyone does want to follow it, just go to my Instagram page and have a look at, you know, my crazy dances that I was doing this year. I had to dance to keep my sanity.
They are crazy.
So, yeah, you guys can share my Instagram.
Yep.
Will do.
And we will do it on the show notes. Thanks, man. Appreciate it so much.
I like the concept of a lion day.
Yeah. I thought he said a lion
day. So did
I. And I was like, okay, so you have a lion. Oh, no, a lion day. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Chasing antelope.
That's the kind of wildlife encounters we like. We approve of on DCR. Hey, sorry. Did you see somebody got attacked by a falcon?
Yes. Yep.
At Whakarewarewa Forest?
Yes.
Yep. That terrified me, but I also did wonder if it was really that pukeku.
in drag.
Yes.
I was doing the Tarawera 50 one year, and they were like, okay, here we go, 10, 9, 8. And then they went stop. We've just actually had an announcement that there are some very, very aggressive karerea nesting up in one of the blocks, and they will attack you if you go past. So just be careful. 7, 6, 5. And everyone was like,
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Cardia, the native falcon.
Yeah, so. Hey, look, Christian also is up for FKT of the year, and you can vote on that. We'll put the link in our show notes.
Yep, definitely.
So check that out. And after having listened to him and you feel he is deserving of that honour, give him a tick or whatever it is that they do for that voting system. Right.
Thank you very much for tuning in, as always, and thank you to Christian. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio.com. You can find us on all the podcast platforms, like and follow if you fancy, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever, that time you nearly drowned your parents or you went camper van drifting. We'd love to hear from you. You can have a read of them on the website, get inspired, and then send us your one, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, For the Faster, Currens, and Cieli, and thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. Stay tuned for our show in 2 weeks. We have another great guest lined up.
Hey, Kornay. Hey, Kornay. Thanks, Rigby.